We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Welcome back in. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score. We appreciate you hanging out with us on what is the 35th day of Scorantine, as everyone is impacted by this COVID-19 pandemic in one way or another. And it should come as no surprise that an industry that has been impacted by a lot of the changes negatively from the internet and ownership changes over the last decade plus, the Chicago Tribune, they are being impacted in a great way by this pandemic. So joining us to discuss that and the state of the Tribune overall is one of the associate sports editors for the Tribune. He's been at the paper for 16 years. He's worked in newspapers for 28 years, I believe. Chris Bogosian with us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford is in Melrose Park, and Chris is representing the sports department in their latest negotiations with Alden Capital, who owns the majority stake of the Tribune. Chris, I hope I got all of that right. Thank you very much for the time. How are you doing today?
Great. Close enough, Danny. I'll clarify a little later, but yeah, close enough.
Chris, okay. Good afternoon and welcome on board. I miss bumping into you in the lobby of the Prudential Building, and hopefully it won't be long before we bump into each other again. How are you feeling today, man? How's it going?
Everything's fine. I'm in my temporary office in my 12-year-old son's with the mini Bears fatheads on the window and Cubs and Tribune newspaper pages on his walls. So this is my temporary office for hopefully not too much longer, but I'm doing fine. Everybody's good. Everybody's healthy. So that's good.
Chris, what can you update us on with the most recent? I know there was meetings earlier today. What's the latest with the negotiations when it comes to the newsroom and during the pandemic?
Yeah, so a little background. We're first of all, we formed a union, and we're still working on, in general, our first collective bargaining agreement, and we're in negotiations with that. And then we're also, amid this pandemic, we're in talks with Tribune Publishing, our parent company, about alleviating some of the short-term, we hope, temporary cash issues that they're having because of declining ad revenue, obviously, that was already low before this, but it's obviously with business not open, and we're in a crisis. So we proposed a series of limited furloughs that would actually save them more money in a short amount of time, and we're hoping they consider it seriously. You know, they told us earlier this week that they wanted to furlough half of the sports and half of the features departments for 3 months, and we were shocked. I was on this call, and I you know, obviously was stunned. And then we called their bluff, and we said we'd like to take that off the table, and they accepted it. And we've got another offer, and we're still negotiating now. And it's moving in the right direction, we think, and we're working hard. We had talks earlier today. We're going to talk to them again tomorrow. So that's about all I can say there.
And so overall, the Tribune, you know, I call it the paper of record in Chicago. There have been some extraordinary things written about this recently. A couple of the most high-profile reporters at the Tribune took out an op-ed in the Washington Post searching for new ownership for the paper. There have been people who have left voluntarily. There have been reports of pretty aggressive requests for buyouts for people who are not very tenured reporters. The people who own this thing are now, it's called Alden Global Capital. You can Google what they do with newspapers. What is the state of the Chicago Tribune newsroom right now before the pandemic as it relates to the people who own the Chicago Tribune?
Yeah, so you're right. David Jackson and Gary Marks, two of our award-winning investigative reporters, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, I think it was mid-January, urging some local, hopefully local philanthropists to invest in the Chicago Tribune. And because the big thing is this Alden Global Capital. It's our biggest shareholder. It's a hedge fund with a reputation for making severe cuts at newspapers across the country, especially in features and sports, as we just found out. It's just straight out of their playbook. They've gutted papers such as the Denver Post and the Mercury News in San Jose, California, St. Paul Pioneer Press, Boston Herald, you know, it goes on and on. I remember reading in the Washington Post a couple years ago, the California News Group, it's like 16 newspapers in the San Jose, San Francisco area. They had 16 regional newspapers, and they had roughly 1,000 employees, and it was gutted to about 150. So you can do the math there better than me probably, but that's what these people do. They just gut newsrooms. So we are working really hard in these negotiations. We're more than willing to engage with TribHub, and we you know, more than anything want a local investor hopefully to take over and you know, this Alden Global Capital hedge fund is just not good for newspapers in general, and certainly not for us.
Is there any reason to be optimistic? You're getting any interest?
I know a couple of months ago there was some interest. I don't know, Dan, that anything recently has come about. To be honest with you, I don't know. I haven't heard, and I'm assuming amid this pandemic that's probably not happening.
Chris, even pre-pandemic, the Tribune has been becoming thinner and thinner, as you know, literally and with the staff. What does your management team expect you guys to do to, in our language, program your sports pages without a staff? Do they? I guess what I'm asking is, do they care about the product right now?
Of course they do, and you know, when I say Tribune Publishing, I'm talking about the parent company, right? Our newsroom leaders, my boss, Amanda Kashubi, and her boss, her immediate boss, Chrissy Wolf Graham Taylor, they and Colin McMahon, they of course value what goes into the print edition and especially more so online. Of course they do. And this is a directive, we believe, from above that. So, you know, Amanda she took over in January of 2019, and she has been, she's been dealt a bad hand, and she's faced obstacle upon obstacle, and she's trying to keep us, focused as much as we can. You know, we had, five people in, the first few months before this even hit, five people out of, I think it was 22. We had a staff of 22 in January or February, and that's down from about when I got here. I would say it was probably 40 or 45, if not even more, in 2004. So anyway, this calendar year, we had five people leave the department. Two longtime editors, And Jimmy Greenfield, who covered the Blackhawks, and Rich Campbell, as you well know, covered the Bears for us. So, and we didn't get to rehire after that, and then the pandemic. So we have tried to, you know, and I will say this: we are very headstrong. We are very proud of what we do, and I know we can continue to do this. It's hard with this cloud hanging over us, right? It's very hard with this Alden Global Capital cloud. And but Amanda keeps us focused. We are trying to do, you know, the best we can, and we are still, I mean, that's the thing, is we're still producing. I mean, you guys know, despite this pandemic, there's been a lot of stuff going on, right? We have the NFL draft, of course, the lead up to it and the actual event that was obviously altered because it went virtual. We've had the Blackhawks. They fired their president. Mm-hmm. We had the Bulls and their front office shakeup and probably more. And not to mention the effect of the pandemic on the sports world, all the leagues, all the teams, all the players, all the fans. And we've been writing that, and we've been reporting that. Not only that, almost half of our writing staff has been asked by Chicago Tribune management to help out in the coronavirus coverage. We have three reporters, sports reporters, helping out writing obituaries for coronavirus victims. And two other reporters writing other coronavirus-related stories. So, you know, that's the thing, is we're all well-rounded journalists. We can do this. We can help out wherever we're needed. The fact that the claim that because sports aren't going on, sporting events, games aren't going on right now, doesn't mean there are things to write about and cover and edit and produce is ridiculous.
Chris Bogosian from the Chicago Tribune is our guest. What is the morale inside the Tribune right now in terms of, like, what are people afraid of, that if Alden Capital gets their way, the result of the Chicago Tribune will be what?
Just another in a long line of paper of formerly good papers that have dwindled to just simply producing, you know, I don't know what the right word is. We need to stick together. We need to continue to produce and deliver for our readers. The readers are obviously the most important thing. And I'm telling you, if I could show you, we have these metrics, chart beat, we call it, where it measures our readers and where they're coming from and how many people click on each story and how long the engagement time is. And these sports stories that we've been writing, despite, you know, obviously the coronavirus coverage is going to be well ahead of that, right? All the Pritzker updates and Lori Lightfoot and all of that stuff is going to be well ahead of that. But even in a time when sports aren't going on, I mean, our stuff is doing very well. And it's just a shame that the parent company doesn't recognize that. That's the thing. It's a little disheartening, to be honest with you. It's just disheartening. And as I said, in negotiations, it's a slap in the face.
Yeah, and with the union being relatively new, just real quickly, Chris, when did you guys decide this? It was time to unionize, because this is new with the Tribune, relatively. Yes,
correct. It was I want to say a year ago. I don't have that exact date, to be honest with you. I want to say about a year ago.
Year-ish, yeah. You know us. We're the ish show. So we'll say a year ago. And, you know, I'm a union guy. We're not a union shop here. I've been a part of stations that were union and parts of them that weren't. And same in the newspaper business. A union is only as strong as its membership. And you describe your colleagues as headstrong. But, man, oh, man, with the climate that's out there everywhere, it just seems like you guys are between a rock and a hard place right now, because these jobs are so thin. And it's just, I wish you all the luck in the world, but it's hard to be optimistic given the constraints of the business overall, not just with Tribune Publishing.
I know what you're saying, and believe me, I do. And you know, I have these conversations with my wife. I have these conversations with a lot of other people, and first of all, I appreciate you wishing us luck because I think we need it, to be honest with you. But I do think we're a strong group. This union committee that I really just started on the negotiating team a few weeks ago, to be honest with you. They wanted a representative from sports, and I have been here, I've been here almost 16 years and I've been in the business almost 30 or almost 28. So they asked me to join, and I said, sure. And, it is an unbelievable group to be a part of. And these negotiations they haven't always gone great, but we're very optimistic and we're very hopeful that the parent company will see our points of view and we can come out to an agreement sometime soon. And then, obviously after that, our first CBA.
Well, Chris, you have the support of this show, man. Listen, the sports is great and you guys do great work, but this city is complicated. It is big. It is diverse. It is historically corrupt. It is violent. This city needs a vibrant, diverse, strong Chicago Tribune. Like, I believe that it is absolutely imperative for the city of Chicago that you guys do not go the way of the other newspapers that Alden Capital has taken over. So it has been I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that it has been scary to follow this story. And good luck, man, because
I appreciate it.
The city needs you guys. So thank you for the time.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Have a good weekend.
You
Take
too.
Care.
So that's Chris Bogosian. He's an editor in the sports section at the Chicago Tribune. And I know that that's a little bit inside baseball, Mac. I get it. But I highly recommend people Google Alden Capital newspapers. There's a story on Vanity Fair. The hedge fund vampire that bleeds newspapers dry, now in charge of Chicago Tribune. Like, it is...
Yeah,
it is not good. Like, Pointer, Chicago, they're reporting on it themselves, which is something that, like, I really respect the hell out of newspapers, their ability to do. Like, the Chicago Tribune does reporting on the ownership group that buys them or that has 32% controlling shares. And it is a wild, wild story. To journalists don't normally get involved in the business side of their newspaper. Like, that's normally something that they don't do. So for the top investigative reporters of the Tribune to go to the New York Times and take out that op-ed pleading for someone to buy the majority controlling shares from Alden Capital, like that I know Jay Billis would say it's not unprecedented. Like, that is unprecedented. That does not happen. The Chicago Tribune is in a very dire situation right now.
Yeah, it troubles me. It's a sign of this particular ownership group. I'm glad you illuminated it as well as you did yesterday, because that editorial at the end of the show that you shared was really eye-opening, and it sort of defeats the old cliche, the devil you know is better than the one you don't know, because there were some devilish owners prior to this group assuming control, and that editorial outlined it, including the guys who think with the little man in the pants rather than think with their heads and try to be businessmen. It was very, very candid and very, very vivid, and is an accurate depiction of it. And you've been trying to hammer out a CBA for a year, and it I don't know. He can only say so much. It strikes me.
He's in a tough spot.
Yeah,
I appreciated him coming on. I've been talking to him for a few days. Like, I know some people were like, just say exactly what you want to say. It's very impressive that he came on in the first place.
Yeah. They're pushing a snowball up a mountain right now, and it's not going to be easy because the business is so volatile. They know they have the rank and file pretty much over a barrel. It's like, where are you going to go? Sometimes hiring, it's the old gun to the head thing. If you don't have that with your management team, sometimes you can't get anything that makes sense. And it's just the business. Nobody's hiring. You want to go blog? Fine, go blog. Start your own paper. You know, that's probably going to be the response they're going to get. It sounds like they have not made much progress if they've been banging away at this thing for a year already.
Yeah, and so a lot of companies and a lot of businesses are impacted by COVID-19, but I thought it was important to highlight to people, like, the Tribune really didn't need this right now. They needed all of the leverage they could get. And, yeah, it's just not good is all I can say. And so just support the Tribune. They need it. And a subscription is one thing, but just if you know anyone even that works there, just know that it is not good right now, and it's not through any fault of their own. So I think that story matters in a sports context or otherwise. Like we had my mom on for Mother's Day. I would, you know, every day, man, during breakfast, read the Chicago Tribune sports section.
Like sure,
you know what I mean? Like that paper, it should matter to every Chicagoan, whether you have a problem with a columnist or an article, or you believe in a political slant or whatever. Like, the Chicago Tribune should matter to every Chicagoan. Period.
The Sunday paper used to be, I don't want to use the phrase religious experience for me, but it was every bit as important to my Sundays as anything else I've ever done in my life, except watching NFL on Sundays. I just that thick, that 36 page, whatever it was, that would spend you spend an hour and a half, 2 hours if you're going to go cover to cover, and all the great agate that was included because it was only a once a week shot well before there was internet too. And that's where you got your stats. You know, on Sundays they'd run all of every stat in Major League Baseball, but it came out once a week. And as Sunday mornings with that. And now the Sunday paper is a dinner menu. Almost nothing in it. And you will go online. Well, I'm not talking about online. I'm talking about the old print edition, which has gone the way of the Rambler, which didn't survive in the automobile industry.
So thank you to Chris Bogosian, Associate Sports Editor for the Chicago Tribune, for coming on and giving us a little bit of a peek inside what's happening with that newspaper, the newspaper of record in Chicago. There's an ex-Bears coach who's celebrating a birthday, and it seems like history has been very kind to him, frankly. Well, I want to go over this with you next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Score.
One of the first things Michael McCaskey said to me, he gave me the history behind the Green Bay-Chicago rivalry. Number one goal we'll have is to beat Green Bay.
Love it, Pittsburgh.
I'm black.
Bobby, do you plan on bringing Mike Morris back?
What kind of question is that anyway?
That's a good point you brought up, Brad. I haven't said that very often, but...
Rex is our quarterback. Kyle Lauren's our quarterback.
Jay's our quarterback.
Jay Cutler is down right now.
Caleb Payne is our starting quarterback.
Josh
is our quarterback.
Where would we be without football?
Happy 62nd birthday to former Bears coach, current Illini coach, and a man with a beard I could only dream of, Lovie Smith, celebrating his 62nd birthday today, Dan McNeil.
He looks like a very sage man, doesn't he, with the white beard on that Illini sideline, born on this day in 58 in Gladewater, Texas. And as the years have rolled on post-Lovie Smith, I think he is viewed by many much more kindly than he was on his way out the door. Don't you?
100%. I mean, Lovie Smith, it's obviously a complicated story and legacy, right? But it's too simplistic to say, oh, it was a mistake for firing a guy who went 10-6. He started 7-1, right? Like they stumbled down the stretch there, and he had been there since 2004. So you could certainly have made the argument that they peaked with Lovie. But history's been very kind to him when you get followed after getting fired by 10-6 and you won 56% of your games, and you get followed up with Mark Trestman, who won 40%, and John Fox, who won 29%. So
yeah.
History has been kind to Lovie Smith.
Yeah, sometimes be careful what you wish for winds up being an absolutely accurate statement. During his 11 years with the Bears, a 3-3 postseason record and a ton of success on the defensive side of the ball, and he turns it around pretty quickly. His first year here, they were set pretty well defensively. They had secondary problems in 0-4. The offensive line had Kreutz and Tate, and I think Reuben Brown was already here, but a little thin. They didn't have a tight end. Where have we heard that before? They weren't real good at wide receiver. And Rex Grossman was their quarterback, but the following year they flip it and go 11-5, flip you for real, and then the 13-3 season that followed. What undid Lovie Smith for me, not just my opinion, is that he probably still would be coaching the Bears if he could have figured out a way to put the right offensive coordinator in place. That was his undoing, as I see it. The consistent shuffling of philosophies offensively, and you're already at a disadvantage because you come in and Rex Grossman and Kyle Orton are your guys. You got limited upside there with both of those players. You're hoping they just don't get you beat, and your defense is good enough, and you had a real good kicking game with Robbie Gould, and also the punter was very, very good for a number of years. But that inconsistency, the instability of their offense is what kept the Bears from winning more. And it's unfortunate because the defenses were so damn entertaining. He was a hell of a defensive coach before he got the head coaching job. He was a very successful defensive coordinator, and his players loved playing for him. And that means something to me as long as they play hard and don't take advantage of him being a player's coach. And I think for the most part, they didn't. So I think his tenure as the Bears, can be viewed as a good one. You survive 11 years, you've done something right. Only a couple of games above the 500 mark, though. In those, 81-63. His career mark, because of the disaster in Tampa, is only two games above the 500 mark. But he went 81-63 as Bears head coach in regular season play, 3-3 in the postseason. And, of course, 0-1 in his one Super Bowl appearance when the Bears got thrashed by Indianapolis 29-17.
Yeah, I mean, his Bears tenure, I don't know if he'd still be coaching today. 17 years or whatever that would be, 2004 to now, 17 seasons, 16, 17 years. That doesn't happen in the NFL. So I don't know if something else would have gotten him or just the sea of change would have just caught up to him. But your point about
I didn't word that very well. He would have been able to continue. His record would have been viewed much differently, and he would have been more successful. Is a better way of shaping that.
Yeah, because I don't mean to quibble with the point, but just like I don't think that he was that good of a coach that he would have lasted two decades. That just doesn't happen in the NFL. But he definitely was underappreciated. I know that Shep is a big believer that turnovers are not random, and Lovie Smith in those Bears teams is probably exhibit A if you were making that argument, certainly in Chicago, but even nationally. You talk to any of those guys. I've heard, Peanut Tillman do it at length with Lawrence, talk to Lance Briggs about it. He coached turnovers. Like, he coached taking the ball away, and those teams were consistently great at it. And I will also say, just to bring it to present day, when people talk about firing Matt Nagy, I know it's only a 2-year sample, so it's
very, 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 very small. I get it. But Lovie Smith won 56% of his games. Matt Nagy so far has won 63% of his games. Ditka won 63% of his games.
Gotcha.
George Halas won 64% of his games. Like, it's only 2 years, and so one bad season could skew that greatly. The sample isn't significant enough to be representative. I understand it. But if a bad year for Matt Nagy ends up being a 500 season, he's going to be the coach for a heck of a long time.
Yes. Yeah, people to flood our tech zone with that. He's got to be gone this year. How can you – they're going to. unless they really are terrible, they'll both be back in 2021. Not a doubt in my mind.
And I know we want to talk about Lovie, but I'm just saying, like, history of the Bears organization, the McCaskey family, how they view it, just look at the comparison. Wani, 42% of his games. Dick Geron, 44%. Lovie, 56%. Trestman, 40%. John Fox, 29%. Like they're not firing Matt Nagy if he goes 7-9 this year and is winning 58% of his games.
Right.
Like it's just not happening.
No, they're not firing him whatsoever, I would think. I mean, I know that Matt Miller had his takes on how bad the Bears will be next year, and then he says they're gonna probably maybe fight to get to 7 wins. It's like, that's not awful by NFL standards. But I mean, Lovie, what it comes down to for me is not hiring an offensive coordinator. And also, I think the biggest mistake or the biggest gaffe that he had was how he handled the Ron Rivera thing right after the Super Bowl loss. When you remember that Bob Babich is brought in and that defense is in the middle of its window to compete for NFC titles, potentially the Super Bowl. And that was a defense that, sure, Tommy Harris wasn't the same that year. Obviously, the Mike Brown injuries had added up by then. I didn't think that the change at defensive coordinator and how that all that went down set up a good tune for 2007.
Yeah, they differed philosophically. Lovie was favored much more of a conservative. Ron was always about attack. He got that from Buddy Ryan, and he was way more content to trust the corners in man coverage and send more pressure if you're not getting it from your front four. And that was a difference that surfaced in the Super Bowl and arguments in the Super Bowl. And I think Ron had to get his own flight home from Miami. But he also struggled in the free agency area. I mean, and all of them do it. All GMs do it. All coaches do it. You have an affection for a guy because you knew him when. And sometimes 3 years is a lifetime in the NFL. And Lovie thought, you know, Orlando Pace was worth a big contract. Pace was finished. Adam Archuleta was another one. Both plucked off of the St. Louis scrap heap and both colossal wastes of big money by the Bears.
Yeah, Archuleta is the one that always sticks out to me. That's the one that resonates because it feels, you know, Adam Archuleta only played one season for the Bears. And that's how bad it was. It felt like he was here for like four because it was just him getting picked on every damn week.
Yeah, and then Chris Conte relieved him of that job.
Yeah, Chris Conte still getting beat by Randall Cobb. But yeah, I don't know. Lovie, I think that Danny was right the way he said it before the break there. History's treated him really well. And it's because of the failures of Trestman, because of the failures of everyone else that's not been Nagy that you look back on, oh, yeah, that Lovie thing wasn't that bad. But then you forget how bad that offense was really outside of really only just two years in there that it was respectable.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But I don't think it's even fair to say, like, it wasn't really that bad. It was good. Like, that's good. 56% of your games going to a Super Bowl, 3-3 in the playoffs, winning Coach of the Year. Like, that's being employed for, what, 9 seasons?
Three playoff appearances in nine years. Like,
I mean,
compared to, like, an NFL average, I don't even know. Obviously, the Patriots are going to be one extreme. The Browns are going to be the other extreme in there. But where is roughly 3 playoff appearances in a 10-year span? Is that, by NFL standards, is that – yeah, but how many playoff appearances? They only went 3 times under Lovie.
I thought he was 3-3 in the postseason.
That's games.
Yeah, you got to lose, so that's games.
Okay.
Yeah, six playoff games every time you – yeah, exactly. So
and one of those is against the worst playoff team in NFL history. Don't you forget.
I won't. The 7-9 Seahawks. We became quite familiar with them in the midday show. Softy Mahler.
that was your guy. But yeah, I think history's been kind to him. Where does he rank, Mac, for you? If you're ranking Bears coaches in your lifetime,
He probably would be near the top. I would think.
Yeah.
I think you start by just eliminating people. It just most of them bad, though. I guess you'd have to say because they've won one championship in my lifetime, Mike Ditka. If you're just going to base it on titles and division championships, it would have to be Ditka one, and then Lovey'd probably be right after him. I don't know.
In terms
of
the years that I remember, it's Lovey.
Yeah.
Can't even carve a Mount Rushmore.
No, you can't.
Right. I think it's going to be Nagy, but...
Yeah, my introduction to the Bears was Jim Dooley in 1969. They went 1-13, and that was on the heels of the Cubs folding. That was a rough year to be a young sports fan. Jim Dooley, Abe Gibron was awful. Neil Armstrong was a Bears head coach. He was terrible.
You skipped right over Jack Pardee.
Jack Pardee didn't get it done. Heck of a player with the Redskins years ago, but a lousy head coach here. And then the coach arrived in 1982. And they probably would have won more had he not lost his mind and been so selfish. But anyway, happy birthday to Lovey Smith. 62 today. Happy birthday, Lovey.
Happy birthday, Mike.
We also have a rock and roll birthday worth celebrating today. One of the greatest pounders in the biz, Alex Van Halen, is 66. Oh, did we need Van Halen in the late 70s, Parkins? We'd given up hope the Beatles were ever going to get them back together again. The Stones were pretty much done with their best material. What's new? What's fresh? What's out there? Here comes Van Halen 1 in 1978, and Alex Van Halen, a huge part of their success. Born in Amsterdam. And, man, this guy. You got a favorite Van Halen song or two, Danny? What do you think of when I say Van Halen?
I love Amsterdam, I'll tell you that. I have no favorite Van Halen
no
song.
No favorite Van Halen?
I don't. This one.
This one?
Yeah.
Here's Danny Parkin's favorite Van Halen track. It's Hot for Teacher. On 670 The Score at 670thescore.com. McNeil and Parkins, Feel Good Friday, here until 6. Glad you're with us.
Mac and Parkins on The Score. We've got the mayor and governor talking about the return of sports. Jim Boylan maybe coming back, maybe not. And your Bears brass spoke on the state of, you know, everything. But any teachers you enjoyed, Mac? Or that was that last song, right? Hot for Teacher, my favorite Van Halen song that I just decided on?
Yes, and you picked a good one, Danny. And,
I thought so.
Yeah, definitely a good one. Yes, when I was in eighth grade, I had a music teacher named Deborah Threlkeld. It was a really way too many consonants in her name, but, man, she could teach. And it was Miss Threlkeld. And it was funny that Bernsey was playing Doobie Brothers music on the radio station here today, and they picked Black Water. They did a virtual thing the other day, and it sounded really good, so he wanted to share with his audience, and they played Black Water, and it was very, very good, and the voice is still very, very solid. And I was trying to sell Deborah Threlkeld on us singing that song. It had just been released at our eighth grade concert, and she wanted nothing to do with that. So, but she was, yeah, she was very, I think everybody has at least one, right? So eighth grade,
well, of course,
for me,
I
music
mean,
teacher.
Yeah. Well, and I will say the Shep referenced it in our group chat and the text line has gotten it. And my thing with music is like, as soon as I heard that song, I was like, oh yeah, it's in Varsity Blues. I just don't know who did it. Like I can, if I hear a song, I can tell you what movie it was in, what commercial, what television show, but like who actually wrote it or sang
right.
it. No yeah. clue. But yeah, that scene with, Miss Davis, I give it a 10. Billy Bob asking her to go to prom in Varsity Blues. It's incredible stuff.
Yeah, there are songs in movies, and you watch movies, and movies will give – if you've seen anything from Martin Scorsese, you know the Rolling Stones probably.
That's
better
right.
than you think you do, because he is an enormous fan. And thankfully, he's an enormous fan. I'm okay with that part of Marty. That's good.
Are you not okay with any other parts of
no,
Marty?
No, I'm good on Marty. You know that. I'm really
yeah.
good. Yeah, yeah.
No, just how it was worded. It was like, I'm
like a high percentage of his stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, the guy's a talented filmmaker. Pretty talented. He's doing he's got a new project again with Netflix. You know, after you do $200 million as a budget for The Irishman, and they make you do something for like 3 hours, yeah. you're going to take more of their money. So
yeah, I think so.
I don't exactly know what it is, but it's like, oh, good. I'm glad that Marty Scorsese is going to keep doing work for them. That's good.
Hey, back it up a little bit. Which teacher were you hot for?
Oh, I mean, there was a Spanish teacher who was one of the people who would come because I would have when I was out of school for a month with the back surgery, they would come to the house to keep you up to date. You know, the Nutria School District. It's not just to send you home with a packet. Your teacher would come to your house. She was spectacular, and she was one of the chaperones on the trip abroad to Spain when I lived with the family for three weeks in Spain.
She wants some more salsa.
Yeah. Little high school crush for your boy.
I can imagine how your mind wandered on that aircraft.
Yeah, I mean, she's like, man, she's been to my house. We're traveling abroad together. We're practically dating.
See, I like it.
Of course. Yeah. Everyone's been there. We will hear about sports in Chicago and the state of the Bears. And I'm told Shep in a china shop where we just unleash the bull and he like throws haymakers in any random direction and Mike Wilbon and the Princess Bride become his shrapnel. We have to unleash Shep in the 5 o'clock hour as well. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.